Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Good morning, this is Debbie Verney.
Good morning, this is Dave Kubikian.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you can be our very first caller if you want to call us at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. What's going on?
Not much. It's a beautiful day in Saratoga.
It is. I hope you go out to all those wonderful restaurants and you know.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Well, hopefully everyone out there is staying safe and abiding by all the directives to, you know, socially distance and be smart. Nowadays, you got to be covering your mouth of what I read this morning. So just be smart and be safe. We'll all get through it.
Get some stylish masks going on, I think.
I saw a video on how to make a mask out of a bandana. I don't have a bandana to begin with, so that I got to get a bandana, but it was pretty cool. And because you're using something like that size, you could make it a style, actually. You know, it doesn't just have to be some sort of surgical mask, which, by the way, try not to use because I think the medical professionals need that a lot more than we do going to the grocery store.
Yes, definitely. You know, it's one of those things where I saw where a lot of people are making masks for the medical professions with fabrics, and then I saw an article that said that if you're doing that with fabric, you need to put different fabric on either side of the mask, because if they take the mask off, then they don't know which side was towards them and which side was towards the patient.
Interesting. Well, you know, there's a lot of local companies that are doing things like that. They're kind of changing up what they're manufacturing, and kudos to them. That's really important. I'm happy that they're trying to help out however they can. And, you know, most of us don't make fabrics for a living or don't make safety supplies or plastics that can't convert what we do to help. But we sure as hell, you know, heck can stay home, and we can work remotely where possible, and we could not, you know, get 18,000 rolls of toilet paper if we go to the market. You know, just be good to each other and all that stuff. Not to be too preachy here, but we all can do our role to at least make the impact on upstate New York as little as possible. And then eventually we'll get back to the normal business, which is estate planning and elder law. In our case, we have been continuing. It you know, we... Not jokingly, but we say all the time, the world doesn't stop just because other things are happening. And, you know, just in this past week, Debbie, we've had some clients call, existing clients that, you know, need to update things, existing clients that need their documents because really bad things are happening and they need copies of the healthcare proxy and power of attorney. We've had clients whose siblings or parents, you know, have a long-term care event. And so we're moving things, you know, we're doing what we do. We're doing Medicaid applications and crisis plans and all the different lessons that we always talk about in these kinds of times become even more important, and they actually are put into action. And, you know, we'll see what callers we have today, but there's a lot to talk about in terms of, you know, the new budget for New York State and the impact on Medicaid, as well as how important it is to have that power of attorney, healthcare proxy. And as we'll talk about, how important it is to really create that trust as soon as possible because of these changes in New York State's budget. So a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And again, the phone number at the radio station is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. It's interesting that you were talking about current clients because people have so much time at home. And I've got a few clients that are actually kind of stuck out of state. I have some clients that are, they have a house down in South Carolina, and they called up and they were like, you know, we've been thinking about it a lot, and now we want to give everybody equal.
Right.
So we want to change our documents. We want to change them now. You know, it's like, and I'm like, well, you know, you can wait till you get back. No. You know, they feel like they need to change them now. So we're going to amend their trust and send the documents out to them they'll have to get sign them in front of a notary and send them back. So documents like a trust amendment are fairly easy to do as long as they can find a notary, but it's not like we can mail them out a will or mail them out a power of attorney for them to do. It's something that we're obviously going to have to meet with them on. So if there was something that they had to do, say a will or something, we can actually do that now, right?
Yeah, we could. Well, we could do everything that we've always been able to do. It's just we need to be a little more creative on how we do it. So what are the basics of what we do? So estate planning is at the basic level, healthcare proxies and powers of attorney and wills, right? Maybe a living will as well, so for end-of-life decision-making. And then it could get a little more complicated as we get into trusts, revocable, or Medicaid, you know, where we're geared a little more towards avoiding probate, unique family situations, and then eventually planning for long-term care for immediate need. That's in the case of home care, at least for the next several months. We'll get into that in a couple minutes here. But we're still able to do our phone consultations, right, instead of in person, instead of you sitting across from the table from someone. Debbie, right, your calendar is full of phone appointments now, right, and Zoom appointments. Is that right?
It is. It's full, and it's great to hear from our clients. Like I said, you know, we don't charge our clients for phone calls. So I've heard from a lot of my clients, and they have said, well, we just want to make sure everything's okay. We want to make sure that you've got everything, everything's okay. Can you review this with us? I mean, and that's great because we love to hear from our clients, and it's good that we can give them that sense of security that everything's still good and everything's okay. And there's been that have just called to say hi and make sure things are going well. It's just hilarious.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice to hear. I don't get as many phone calls as you do, apparently, for the see how everything's doing, but that's very nice that you're getting those calls. So, but new clients, right? Someone that says, hey, you know, I've been thinking about this. I've been putting it off because I don't want to think about, the death part of all this stuff, but I realize now is the time I need a power of attorney, healthcare proxy, and will. You could still have that appointment with them. I can still have that appointment with them, Jay Marie, Harry, right, where we're talking to them over the phone. We're getting their details. We're knowing what makes them tick and all those important things that go into creating a good attorney-client relationship where we could craft that, you know, custom plan for them and their needs. And then the question is, okay, well, great. The price is right, and we're going to do it. And then the question is when and how the heck are we going to sign these documents, and that's where we got to be a little more original.
Debbie,
so,
and David?
Yeah.
We have a call. It's Bruce on line one. Hang on, please.
Sure.
Bruce should be on the air.
Bruce,
good
you
morning,
there?
Bruce.
Good Hello. Morning, Bruce.
How are you?
Good morning. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
We can. What's up?
Okay. There was some question about the airwaves this morning, I guess. My question revolves around a safety deposit box. My wife and I have one, and recently, there was some snags in, you know, being able to get at one for a friend of mine who passed away. If we put my children on as co-signers to that box,
mm-hmm.
and my wife and I passed on, would they be able to go down and access that box before they were named executor?
Debbie, do you want to take this, or would you like me to
take it? Sure. Yeah, it's hard for Dave and I to decide who's going to answer. So, safety deposit box. As long as they're joint on the box, they can access it after you pass away, but they can also access it while you're alive. So, if you put them on,
in my case,
yeah, so if they're joint, they can go in while you're alive or after you pass. The thing that happens a lot of times is you'll go into the bank and they'll say, well, why don't you name them as your deputy, right, as opposed to putting them joint on the box. And unfortunately, when you have someone that's on it as a deputy, they have access while you're alive, but when you pass away, their power passes away, kind of like a power of attorney. You know, it works fine while you're alive. And so if you put your kids on joint on the safety deposit box, there would not be an issue after you pass. They would not have to be appointed executor or anything. They could go in the next day or same day or whatever.
Perfect. Now, I got to jump in here. So at times, Debbie and I may disagree, and I don't disagree with what she said because she's correct. However, what the banks often will do is they will require, even though I'm on your safety box, safety deposit box, if they found out you passed away and it's possible you have your private assets, your private property in that box, we've had clients who do not have access to the box, even though they're on the box, because one of the parties who's an owner of the box has passed away. And it's bank to bank at times. Jane Marie and I had maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago, we had a caller about this exact issue, and it really depends on the bank. And you know, we half jokingly say, well, the answer depends on whether you announce to the bank that, you know, your father passed away, and that's why you need to access it, because you may run into some issues there. They may, out of an abundance of caution, want to say, hold on, this thing should be inventoried, and we got to make sure if dad had, you know, gold bullion that was destined for somebody else in the will, they had a baseball card collection in there, what have you, in order to make sure that goes to the right person, they may pump the brakes on anyone else having access to the box by themselves. So
when the heir goes there, they're better off keeping their mouth shut.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't hear it here.
But, say, I'm here to go in that box, and don't elaborate.
Yeah, I think that's the right way. Look, every bank's going to be different. The purpose, right, and this is why we shout from the mountaintops, don't put, like, your will, an original will, in a safe deposit box, because it could be that even people that are named on the box with you may not have access to that box, and they may need to go through court to get access to that box. Obviously, if there are no other names on the box, you, of course, have to go through the surrogate's court. But even if there are other names on it, we've seen situations where banks have again, pumped the brakes because they know their client had passed away. They know you're on it. They know you're a relative. They know you're on that box. But because it's possible there were specific bequests as part of your estate plan, giving specific items, the diamond earrings are going to X, you know, person X, and person X isn't on that box with you, there's a fear that those diamond rings may go missing.
I see the logic behind it, and I see the bank's reasoning.
Debbie is right. Theoretically, it should be no problem because they're on the box as well, right? But
right.
Once there's that death, it is possible that the bank will say
no. When I get the paperwork for registering my two kids as joint owners of the box, I can ask them at that point. And
sure.
You know, how do you treat that? You know, mm-hmm.
I think that's a great question to ask.
Yeah. It's very, like I say, it happened to a friend of mine, and, you know, it's like the person had to wait 6 months before they were named executor, and in the meantime, you got all these vehicles with titles that are in the safety deposit box sitting around, you know, clogging things up for 6 months, you know, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay,
well, thanks so much for the call.
Much.
Stay safe out there.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling. So, Dave, have you ever had to go into a bank and have a safety deposit box drilled?
No.
I've been
hoping to be able to do that one day.
I've had it a couple of times where the person passed away and we couldn't find the keys.
Mm.
So even after the executor was appointed, we had to go to the bank, and we had to pay for a locksmith to come in and drill the box.
Oh, man.
Because the bank doesn't have keys. So, and then you basically, depending on the bank, you have to take an inventory of what's in the box.
Yeah.
So the bank officer's there, you're there, the guy that's drilling the box is there. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting to see what people have in their safety deposit boxes.
It's... certainly keeps things safe. The problem is, I guess, that maybe it's a little too safe at times. I guess. So be careful with them. Definitely don't put your super important documents. A lot of times our clients will put an original, you know, their filed and stamped deed in their safe deposit box. So when they're doing a trust and we need a copy of their deed to move their house into their trust, they always mention, well, I got to go to the safety deposit box to get it. But the truth is that deed is actually recorded with the county. It's not even that important anymore. But anyway.
Right. We can usually get them online. So if you'd like to be our very second caller.
Very second.
Very first caller. 518-476-5900 and 518-476-5900. You kind of alluded to some changes in the Medicaid laws.
I did. Let me just get back just for a moment to how we're actually doing document signings, because we have a lot of... It's confusing and it's interesting. It's a little different. It's a little less personal than, you know, things would normally be. But these documents are really important. Some of them are, you know, literally matters of life and death in the case of healthcare proxies and living wills. And some others are more for finances. And when you do have clients that are stuck in South Carolina like you do, perhaps they have New York affairs that need to be tended to. So it's really important to have the power of attorney. And then certainly because of the Medicaid conversation we'll have, getting that clock ticking, trusts, and so on for Medicaid. But what we're doing for the actual signings is rather elaborate. We are still going to go through your documents with you. We're going to go through every paragraph, every page, and make sure you understand your documents before you sign anything. This is not a rush job. In fact, we're taking even longer. But you do that by, you know, you met with Debbie, you're going to do your will, healthcare proxy, power of attorney. Debbie, you're going to schedule a phone call with them to go through everything, right? Answer all their questions, make any needed changes, just like you normally would actually at the signing, but instead we're doing this before, right?
Right. I'm going page by page.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of interesting because we kind of brush over some of the stuff whenever we're in person because the person has already reviewed the documents, but whenever you're reviewing them over the phone, you're literally kind of going paragraph by paragraph and explaining it to people, and sometimes you're like, oh yeah, that's an interesting paragraph.
Okay. Well, yes, and it's kind of hard because remember, you're not seeing them unless it's some sort of Skype or Zoom or FaceTime conversation.
Right.
So it's all right, go down midway on the second page on the left-hand side. There's a thing to initial, right? And you're explaining all of that. So that's great for the explanation before the actual signing. But for most of these documents, right, we need notaries, we need witnesses. Okay, your healthcare proxy, your gift riders on the powers of attorney, your wills, we need witnesses for those, two disinterested witnesses. So even those who are social distancing and they're staying at home, most of the people in that home can't be a witness, right? So we have an issue. So what we've been doing is one of two options for our clients. One is after we've gone through that whole procedure of calling and going through all the documents, ideally the next day, we're having clients come to the office location, not inside the office, but outside, and we will hand them their documents in a sealed envelope where we put it together while we're wearing plastic gloves. We put stickies all over the place, and we are there next to them, 10 feet next to them, going, you know, and saying, all right, here are your documents, review them as you need to. We've marked where you're supposed to sign initial. You're there for a couple questions if they have any, Debbie. But it's in a more abbreviated type of signing. But at least you saw them sign with your own eyes, as did our witness. And you can notarize, you could witness them, and everything that's got to be done. An alternative to that, which some practitioners are doing and we're starting to do if our clients want to, is to do the signing by video, but the witnesses become an issue. And certainly we want to meet with that client after this, you know, the dust has settled here, just to fine-tune documents. We don't want some technicality down the road to invalidate your documents. But the state has recognized, Debbie, that these are strange times and documents are still important. And they've actually put together a procedure for notarizing documents. And while we don't have an official way to be witnesses by video, right? That we're trying to do some more in person, but with a lot of safety precautions. But these are important documents, and kind of to add to the fact that they are, is that New York State is kind of bending over backwards to make sure you could still sign them.
Well, it's very important. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't have documents. I got a call yesterday from a lady in Canada. Interesting, huh? From Canada. Her twin sister lives in Niskayuna, and her sister is so overwhelmed that she can't make any calls. So her sister from Canada was actually calling down here to find an attorney to do documents for her sister in Niskayuna. Oh, because she's so overwhelmed. So we have a phone conference set up on Monday, and I'm going to talk to the sister in Canada, and then we're going to patch the other sister that's local in to see what we need to do, because there's a lot of people that are very overwhelmed by this. And she said, look, she doesn't have anything. We're going to get this taken care of, whatever it takes. So it's nice that families are reaching out and they're taking care of each other.
That sounds awfully complicated, I got to tell you. My head was spinning as you were saying it. Well, look, they're important, and that's not our opinion. It's really is fact, because when we have some difficult situations in life, the power of attorney is key. Mike Luizzi, who's one of our paralegals on Medicaid, and I had a phone call yesterday, and this is really sets it up pretty well. So mom and dad live in West Virginia. They're going to be moving to the Albany area. Mom's going straight into Shaker Place, which is the new name for the redesigned Albany County Nursing Home, which is by the airport. Mm-hmm. And dad's going to, you know, settle in somewhere, find a home or apartment here. But they do have a home in West Virginia. And, you know, mom's going through some things where she might not be able to have the capacity to sign documents. And as the facts shake out, financially, mom's going to qualify for Medicaid in that nursing home. The numbers work out just perfect. And, in fact, the facility had mentioned to them that they were willing to do the Medicaid application for them immediately. So we said, well, you know what? Sounds like, based on all our questions for you, you qualify now and you always qualified. And you know, you didn't do any transfers that you weren't allowed to do. So if they're offering to do it for you, well, why don't you have them do it? Because we would charge you money, and we're good, honest attorneys. And so that's all right. Free phone call. This is what you do. And let us know if we could help down the road kind of conversation. But where there was this glaring gap, Debbie, was, you know, they said, all right, well, we're going to sell the house in West Virginia. And I put it on the market. And sometime the next month or two, hopefully it sells. Who knows with this economy now and situation. I said, all right, well, are both of you on the deed? And the dad said, yeah, my wife's on the deed. And I said, oh, well, there's the issue. Do you have a power of attorney for her? No, we don't. So how do you convey a piece of property, Debbie? All the people who own it need to sign the deed. Who owns the property? Mom and dad, right? They both need to sign those real estate documents down the road, and she may not be able to. So option A is we do a quick power of attorney, assuming she's able to sign and has the capacity now to sign so that her husband can sign real estate documents down the road for her. Option B is not a good option, is she does not have the ability to do it, or they decide not to do a power of attorney, in which case he's going to need to do a guardianship to be able to sign for his wife so he could sell his home. But it gets even more complicated, Debbie, because where does mom reside? Where is that guardianship going to take place? Well, I think you'd be correct in saying she's a New York resident as soon as she sets foot in that nursing home. So now it's going to be a New York State guardianship. And all the cost that goes along with that. I don't know about West Virginia guardianships, but I know New York guardianships are expensive. So think about it. Just a really basic power of attorney, something they could have done years ago, would alleviate all of this complication, and it's for good reason. It's complicated, and if mom can't sign, we got to do a guardianship. It's craziness.
Well, and that involves the court, and right now the courts are closed.
Yeah, we'd have to say it's an emergency guardianship to try to get it in, and that's there's a couple limited ways to get inside the court, and an emergency guardianship would be qualified. I don't know if doing it so you could sell a house would count as an emergency, but I'd like to not have that. I'd like to not do that research, if you know what I mean.
No, I agree, and that's why I always say that the power of attorney is actually the most important document that you can do. If you don't have a will, the state of New York is going to say where your stuff goes. If you don't have a health care proxy, hopefully they're going to look to your next of kin. Things have kind of changed a little bit now because they're not allowing people in with the patient, so that makes it kind of difficult. But a power of attorney, if something happens to you and you can't make decisions for yourself, you're kind of dead in the water. You'd have to do a guardianship, and those are really, really invasive, very, very expensive.
Absolutely. So, Debbie, I know we're coming up on the half hour, but we did tease this whole Medicaid change. So let's get into it a little bit, and then we'll get into it a lot on the back side. So I don't know if anyone was listening last week, but if you were, we did talk about how the governor has been doing a really good job on this pandemic response, and at least I speak for me and my wife, and saying, well, one of the daily parts of our life now is listening to the updates, the good and the bad, and at least hearing the governor and being informed. One of the things we talked about, though, was that New York wasn't going to be able to get a certain amount of aid from the federal government because New York had been fiddling with the Medicaid system. And one of the rules for an earlier part, I think it was Part B or A of this kind of bailout that the country is getting, was money to the states. But one of the catches was the state cannot be fiddling with the Medicaid system. And Governor Cuomo, in many of his press conferences, said, well, look, we can't get that money because I've been fiddling with the Medicaid system, and he's got a redesign team, and you know, he's trying to make Medicaid more efficient. And one of the ways he's been trying to do it is to make it so that it's harder to qualify, because if it's harder to qualify, less monies are spent by the government to pay for Medicaid. Essentially, he's looking to cut programs, and the, you know, elder law attorneys out there and the advocates for the elderly have been saying, wait a minute, we really depend on some of these programs. Please don't cut that, right? Cut other things, maybe.
Right, exactly.
Debbie and David?
Yeah.
I have Carl from Mechanicville on the line.
Hey, Carl.
Yeah. Yes, hello there.
How are you?
Hi, what can we help you with?
Okay, fine. I've been to a couple of your seminars last year, and I have in front of me your package of yellow pages to fill in that would normally go to Stacy.
The questionnaire, yeah.
Yes. So I need to start with something. I'm 82 years old. I don't have any will, any trust, but I need to get something moving.
Okay.
And I want to start that 5-year look back clock running as soon as I can. But under the current situation, where would I begin? Let me also state that one of the attorneys that I was at one of the seminars was Harry, and I kind of thought it'd be nice to work with him, if you don't mind me picking a name.
No offense taken.
I'm a little offended, but not that much.
Well, I guess I haven't met all of you, but anyway.
So, Debbie, how does Carl get started here? What does he do?
Well, you've got the questionnaire, and you can actually call the office on Monday if you want to. And you can either, if you don't have the capability, a lot of people are just scanning and emailing the questionnaire. If you can fax the questionnaire, you can mail the questionnaire. Stacy can set you up with a phone appointment with Harry. Harry's around. So he could set up a phone appointment with Harry. Harry would go through the questionnaire with you and find out what your situation is, what is it that you want to do, and then if you decide you want to go forward and get documents done, then we could get your documents done. We're all working remotely, but we can still service our clients and our prospective clients.
And Carl, just like I don't know if you were listening maybe 15 minutes ago, but we talked about this, you know, how we're getting documents signed. And,
yes,
you know, theoretically, if you said the world starts again on June 1st, you know, all right, we could wait till June 1st, I suppose. The problem is it might not start on June 1st. It might go later. And like you mentioned, we do need, or we do want that clock for you to start, because on the backside of the five-year look-back period, on the backside of the 30-month look-back period we're going to talk about on the second half hour for home care, you're not going to get any sympathy from the county, because it turns out that you were just short of 5 years, and you started about 6 months late because of this pandemic. They're not going to feel sorry for you. The five-year look-back period will not reflect this pandemic. So we do want you to get it going, and while it's not ideal to have a phone call with Harry as opposed to seeing him in person and feeling that connection, it's the best we could do right now. And then for the signing part, yeah, absolutely. Again, if you're okay with going through documents with Harry over the phone, we could accommodate the signing and get this going quite quickly.
Yeah. Okay, so the phone number I have for your office, 641-0026. That sound right?
That works. That's one of the direct dials.
Yep.
That's Stacy's direct dial.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I should use. Then, I can scan these things into a PDF or whatever and email them would be the simplest. Okay, somebody's going to answer that number then.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
If you call after, I think Stacy gets in at 9. So if you call after 9 on Monday, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you're in the offices or not. Okay, that's good information. Let me ask a question, though. Talk about the five-year look back. Suppose we're 2 years into this thing and I need a nursing home. Would I be self-paying, let's say, for 3 years, and when the five-year time hit, switch over to Medicaid? Would it work that way?
Well, let's do this, Carl. Keep listening. We'll go through the break here, and we'll answer your question because it's a long answer. All right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's
Thanks
great.
For the call,
so, okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Bye.
So, all right, and now, hang on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no. We're at 8:34, so we will be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Morning. This is Dave Kabikian.
And we're back for the second half an hour of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. And we'd love to hear your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And Dave is going to start explaining some of the changes to Medicaid. But if you're listening in and you have questions, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And here's Dave.
Well, thank you. So, Carl, I hope you're still listening. So, Carl asked a very important question, which is he gets the clock ticking on protecting assets. He does this Medicaid trust today, 2 years from today. Whether he likes it or not, he needs a nursing home. What do we do? So the answer, Carl, really depends on the assets that you have. And it's our favorite legal answer is depends. You should know that. It depends on what's going on. So if you have a large amount of money that's been in that trust, a large amount of resources, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars more than you're allowed to have, then yes, we may say to you, well, you know what? You may want to just private pay these next 3 years and let's see what's what. Okay, let's see if how you're doing after that, and Medicaid obviously will take over once we get through the 5 years. And believe it or not, in some instances for our clients, privately paying a nursing home at $14,000, $15,000 a month for the next 36 months, 3 years, that may be the best of the bad options, believe it or not. For other clients, what we do is we will, you have the power to revoke your trust, okay? It's not as easy as a revocable trust, but you still maintain all the control. And that's why we like this trust so much. So we would say to you, hey, you know what? Or we'd say to your family members, whoever's your trustee, let's revoke this trust entirely. So now what Carl has is X amount of dollars. And we would implement what's called a loan and gift plan to save half of those dollars. Okay, these are just generalizations we're making because the specifics really matter so much about a house, about are there retirement funds and so on and so forth. But in that instance, right, well, maybe saving half of that money is the best option, right? Obviously, we don't feel very good about it. We want our clients to start planning ahead of time by more than 5 years because while saving half the money is great, we also are not saving the other half of the money. And we want to save all your money if we can, okay? But that certainly is an option. Now, what we normally will say is, are you sure, and this will be a great segue to the new Medicaid rules, we'll say, are you sure you need a nursing home? We understand that the person at the rehab place, the person at the hospital, the discharge manager says, well, there's no way you can be home anymore. And perhaps what they meant is there's no way you could be home alone anymore. And more what our clients have done over the last couple years, and Debbie, you could speak to this, they take advantage of the community Medicaid program, which is essentially bringing the care home instead of going to the nursing home. And the reason why that financially has become so attractive to our clients, among other things, is that historically there's been no look-back period on qualifying. So if Carl, you needed some help next month and you called Harry, Harry could make it with the help of our paralegals, that on May 1st, financially, you would qualify of this year because there historically has been no look-back period. And
for
Debbie, I mean,
for
community Medicaid. And we've seen so many community Medicaid applications in the last couple of years, Debbie.
And David?
Definitely. I mean, no one wants to go into a nursing home. They want to stay home.
Absolutely.
Debbie, David?
Yeah.
We have James from Washington, New York on the phone.
James?
Great. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you all?
Good. How are you
good.
Doing?
What's going on?
Good. I'm going to set up kind of a situation. It's a real one, but this individual has a will.
Mm-hmm.
There are two situations. One, he's married, and the other is he has a significant other.
Okay.
Either or. I put it that way because I'm not sure which is which.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
His daughter-in-law is on his savings account
mm-hmm.
and his checking account.
Mm-hmm.
If, when he dies, if he has not changed, one important thing, he's now divorced.
Okay.
If he dies and has not changed that will, which takes over in terms of those checking account and that saving account?
Well,
the daughter and, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say what you need to understand that a will only controls assets you have individually in your name. So right now, no matter what his will says, if he passes away and his daughter-in-law is joint on those accounts, they're going to pass to her as a matter of law. They wouldn't even have to go through the will. So he needs to be really careful if that's what he wants to happen. If he doesn't want his daughter-in-law to get that money, he needs to make sure that he changes the accounts because if they're joint, she's going to get them.
Got it.
So the will, and it's kind of interesting that you said he's married, he's not married, he's divorced. Generally, whenever a person gets a divorce, if they have a will, the divorce decree usually has, or the separation agreement usually has language in it that says that you waive all rights in the other person's estate. So the will would kind of be null and void. But we always tell people that if you get a divorce or something happens in your life, that's kind of out of the ordinary, you really should make sure that your documents still say what you want them to say. If they were married, you know, if they were married and the person passes away, then the will, even if it leaves everything to the kids, if they have a spouse, you can't disinherit your spouse in the state of New York. So there's all kinds of twists and turns based on the language that the kind of the scenario that you've laid out. But again, if you have a joint account or if you have a beneficiary on account, it supersedes the will. The will is not going to control it.
I see. And she and the significant other
would have no rights. No.
Okay. That's all I need to know. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
All right.
Wow. It's like one of those law school questions on the bar exam, right?
I know. So, before his call, before James's call, we were talking about how it used to be when it came to home care, community Medicaid. There is a new budget in town. It's a long one. But there are some provisions that are really going to impact our clients and our community. So what New York has done, we're going to talk about what they've done and what they've not done. And so the news is mixed. There's some good news. There's some bad news. We'll start with the good news. So when we do Medicaid applications and we have a married couple, there's a certain allowance that a spouse is allowed to have. They're allowed to have more assets than the applicant is, and we really depend on that because we're able to shield a lot more money in the event that there has been no planning or there hasn't been enough planning and there's a need for husband to go into nursing home. We know wife could have blank amount of dollars, and normally it starts at around $75,000 of assets, of resources. The new budget hasn't touched that, which is
right.
That's good news. Good news number two is that when we have spouses again, a lot of times we will take advantage of something called a spousal refusal. And without getting into too much detail about it, it gives us some more options to wiggle our way through getting one spouse qualified while the other spouse, who otherwise would have made their husband disqualified, right? We will not even look at the assets altogether, and there's certain remedies each county can do to combat that, but spousal refusal still becomes a huge weapon that we have to just move things around and get people qualified for whatever kind of Medicaid they need. So that's the good news, okay? The bad news is that home care, where I have said, Debbie has said always, you know, we can get you qualified by next month, not 5 years from next month, like it is in a nursing home Medicaid situation. Next month, you can qualify financially for Medicaid. It's now a longer answer. It's, yeah, we can get you qualified next month as long as we do it before October 1st of this year. Starting October 1st of 2020, the rules for community Medicaid will be different. There will be a 30-month, that's 2.5 years, 30-month look-back period. Okay, so what we expect to see happen between now and October 1st, Debbie, is we expect a lot of clients who have been on the fence as to whether or not they take advantage of community Medicaid, we expect to see a lot of them coming back and saying, all right, you know what, this budget has now twisted our arm. We are going to proceed with the community Medicaid, even if it's for a couple hours of care for our loved one, because the rules starting October 1st of this year will make it so you otherwise could not qualify. Okay, if you have not prepared in advance. We also expect a lot of clients who've been on the fence about creating a Medicaid trust to come in as well. Now, what's yet to be determined officially, and I read the budget up and down, at least the section that applied here, is what happens in terms of retroactivity, right? If we made a transfer prior to October 1st, are we okay? That's a question that's yet to be answered. We do know, though, for purposes of the application itself, you want to apply for home care. If you put in that application before October 1st, 2020, the standard for what the county is going to look at is going to be essentially 0-month look-back period. And we know on October 1st, October 2nd, and thereafter, if you apply for community Medicaid, the standard will be a 30-month look-back period. Okay, so there are some additional questions that this has raised, and we won't go into those additional questions until there's a little more clarity Okay, a lot of the practitioners and the forums that we participate in are saying, well, what exactly does this mean for this unique situation? What does it mean for that unique situation? For our listeners, for the clients, for the non-clients who are just kicking the tires, this is pushing you. This is going to be a nudge to get you to act one way or the other. If you think community Medicaid is going to be worthwhile, get it going before October 1st. Okay, we are
can
going
you
to be
explain,
doing...
Can you explain what community Medicaid is?
Sure, yes. So community Medicaid, or care on your couch, patent pending, as we like to call it, the idea is that you can stay at a senior living residence, you can stay at your daughter's house, you can stay in your own apartment, the house you've owned for 60 years, and you can get services in the comfort of your own, quote-unquote, residence. Okay. And the types of services, the amount of services, who is providing the services, those all depend on how much need you have, and there's a process for evaluating that. That process, by the way, will also be changing. It's a little too convoluted to go into over the radio, but there will be a process for gauging how much need you have. How much need does your dad have? And maybe he qualifies for 8 hours a day of services, and then the questions, who's providing those services? Is it a family friend, a relative? Is it a company that does care at home? There are unique programs within this community Medicaid umbrella that really help when there's, for example, a brain injury or where there's dementia. There are programs for adult daycare, essentially, in different nursing facilities. And obviously, part of the world needs to reopen in order to take advantage of some of these things, right? You know, the adult daycare is not happening these days in nursing homes because of the lockdown. But the idea is that, and this benefits the state, by the way. The idea is, you know what, you stay at home, you stay where you're paying rent, where you're paying the taxes and the insurance, where you're putting food on your own table, you stay where you pay all the expenses, and all New York State does is they pick up the cost of care, okay? And the other benefit of community Medicaid in general is while you're staying at home and getting the care at home, we actually don't lose all your income. In the case of a nursing home, right, a lot of times we're stuck with our client keeping only $50 a month of income, whereas in a community Medicaid care at home situation, we could actually save all the income. Again, it gets a little complicated, but it's doable. This is what we do. I think this is what we are best at. Certainly not the only people that do this, but this is a really important stuff. This is where we could save tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And for example, Carl, who says, what happens if 2 years into my look back period, I need long-term care? You know, we'd love that question to be that, okay, yeah, you needed long-term care in 2 years, and then the following 3 years you got that care at home, which bridged the gap to the five-year look-back period. That's what we would love. And now what the new budget does, Debbie, just complicates it a little bit because if in Carl's example, he said, what happens if it's 2 years from now? Well, we'll need him to get to 2.5 years from now for it to be community Medicaid.
Right.
Unless he starts it before October 1st.
So I guess my question would be, and it's funny because I worked for the firm back when the Medicaid rules changed in February of 2006, and it was mm-hmm. crazy. It was literally
went from three-year look-back period to five-year look-back for a nursing home.
Right. Well, at that point, there was a 3 to a person, 5 to a trust, and then but the look back period accrued every month. So theoretically, if you had put $100,000 in a trust, in 10 months it would be protected.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there wasn't the whole five, and it was crazy. So
right.
You know, we're not trying to get people to rush out and do this, but you really need to think about it because like Dave said, if you've been on the fence, right, and you're thinking, well, my loved one really doesn't need that much care. They need care, but they don't need that much right now. I mean, they reevaluate it, right? So if my person only needed 3 hours a day of care right now, and I'm like, well, is it really worth it for 3 hours a day? They reevaluate, right? So, I mean, 6 months down the road, my person may need 8 hours of care.
Yeah, right, and in general, just from a mathematical point of view, we don't say, well, you should only do it if there's a minimum of blank amount of hours you get, because that's not the issue. The need is the issue. If there's an actual need, you're going to pay for that need. You're either going to ignore that need and then something awful may happen, or you're going to pay someone. You're going to have a relative who's cutting out of work, who's going to check in on you, right? Somehow, some way, that need is going to get taken care of because it's a need, right? It's not a want. It's a need. And if you get into the program, well, that need starts to be covered, right? And you're, at least you're saving some money. And as you get to have more needs, right, there's a process for getting more hours and so on and so forth. But, you know, what I say to people is if you're going to do it early. Okay. If you're going to do the trust, do it when you're healthy. If you're going to do community Medicaid, do it when you need a little bit of care, right? Or start that process, perhaps, or have the conversation, perhaps. And I don't mean to be, you know, look, the point of this show, Debbie, it's educational. It's not like, hey, Herzog Law Firm, you got to use us, et cetera, et cetera. We do this. We can do a lot of it. There are other firms that can do it. If you're on the fence about the idea of this, if you're on the fence on the idea of avoiding probate and protecting assets, go talk to an elder law attorney. Go talk to an estate planning attorney. Don't talk to a real estate attorney who can do wills. Don't talk to a matrimonial attorney who's done one trust before. Go talk to someone who does this stuff. Get your intel. Get your info. Go talk to three people. You know, whatever you got to do. But this is a big game changer, because we usually say, all things being equal, da 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 da. Guess what? October 1st, the difference between September 30th and October 1st, all things are not equal on those 2 days. So you got to do whatever you got to do. And oh, by the way, Debbie, you got to do it during a pandemic where you can't even see an attorney face to face unless it's through a screen. So degree of difficulty is higher, but you got to do it. If you have to do it, you have to do it, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Well, if you've been sitting on the fence, yeah, this is the time to get things done. And even if you're not really sure exactly what you need, that we're offering free consults over the phone. I mean, if you've got nothing else to do and you're sitting at home and you're thinking about doing your estate planning or you're not really sure exactly what you need, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, and again, just I get so worried, Debbie, that we're, you know, someone is put off because Herzog, Herzog, Herzog. A lot of places do free consults. We happen to do them. Obviously, I think that we do things great. I don't have comments on how other people do things. I assume that they do it great. I hope they do it great. But we are a resource, and you guys should use your resources wherever you can and get your ducks in a row. And Debbie, you said it the other day, I think, you know, life doesn't stop, right? The part of the need with these hospital beds is because people still have heart attacks, Debbie. People still need bypass surgeries. People still have strokes. Dementia diagnoses still happen, right? So the need, you know, it's kind of below the surface right now, right? The news is other kinds of things going on in the world. But those underlying issues still happen, you know. Death, unfortunately, still happens, whether it's because of this virus or otherwise. Certainly, incapacity happens. So be prepared to the level you think, or be educated about it. You know, and if you're motivated to do something, great. And if you're motivated to do community Medicaid or a trust, at least do it before October 1st, because October 1st is kind of a game changer. It really is. And it, I mean, this is like, as you, it's something that happens, you know, every 15 years or so, right? In 2006 is the last time there was an earth-shaking elder law issue like this. Yeah.
And we want to make sure that everyone knows what's going on. I mean, it's really kind of our job to educate people more than anything else so that they can make the right decisions, because we want people to make educated decisions. And I think we have room for maybe one call if they want to call in. And the phone number at the station is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900.
In the of educating, you know, in lieu of these live seminars that we usually do, we will be having a series of seminars available on our website or available by email. We may have even some question and answer periods available. The schedule for them hasn't been determined, but they will be this month, and there'll be several of them. So if you're interested in them or you want to be on our email list for it, please email us at info@herzoglaw.com. You can call the office at 465-7581. Again, 518-465-7581. Just leave your contact info. If you're an existing client, shoot any of us an email, and we'll make sure that you know when these seminars are happening. It'll be aging in place. It'll be the basics of Medicaid trust, and we really, the goal is to educate as many people so they could get an educated decision done between now and we're already talking about the fall. I don't even feel like we had a spring, Debbie, but get stuff done before the fall.
Debbie and David, we have Susie on the line from Boston Spa.
Oh, good morning, Susie.
Hi. Your discussion about community Medicaid, I just have one question. To qualify for Medicaid, you have to be quite disabled. I mean, you can't just say, my back really aches when I vacuum, so I need help.
Well, so there's activities of daily living that you need help in. And currently under the new budget, it'll be three activities of daily living or somewhat automatically if there's a dementia, Alzheimer's type of diagnosis.
Oh.
So it's not quite, you know, my back is hurting too.
Yeah, somebody.
Right now.
but they look pretty close.
So it's a little more involved than that, certainly. But and this isn't like a prize we want anyone to just be able to qualify for. I hope everyone's doing all right and doesn't need any of this, but it's just in case.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
That's an excellent question. And, you know, it's interesting that you said, you know, three of the activities of daily living or a dementia diagnosis. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's someone that's been diagnosed, then, I mean, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate. If someone's been diagnosed and there is a cognitive impairment going forward, like we said before, it's an excellent opportunity to kind of get things in order, meet with somebody over the phone, just to see exactly what your options are moving forward. Because that's a very, very scary time when someone's diagnosed like that.
It really is. It's one of those life-changing doctor's appointments, for sure.
Yeah, so...
We haven't heard from Ben that much, Debbie. Ben, how you doing?
I'm good, and the show's over.
Oh.
Okay. Well,
there you go. Be safe, Ben.
Thank you. You too.
Bye,
Debbie.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.